sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on. The essence,
the basics. Hi, I'm Will.
And I'm Phil, and we play in Someone Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin.
And you're listening to KCOU Columbia
88.1.
And welcome, one and all, to the finale of Triple Threat here on KCOU 88.1 FM Columbia. One last time, my name is Kyle Jones, and I am joined by my good friend, Cole Tusing. Cole, how are you doing on this fine Friday morning?
It's unbelievable. And, you know, similar to what I said when we were walking in the studio, we all knew this day was going to happen. This four-year journey that all started faithfully, you know, one day when we were all roommates back in Hatch. And, you know, possibly my eight-year journey of doing, you know, sports talk radio shows may be over. You know, who knows what the career field is out for me. And since this is the last show ever, Kyle, I don't know if I ever told you and, you know, the listeners the story of how I got into sports talk radio shows.
I don't think you did. Go ahead and give it to me.
Best time to do it is now. So, you know, I grew up in, you know, Chicago, lived there most of my life. But the beginning, so right after, you know, eighth grade, so like right before, you know, freshman year of high school, my dad got a job down in New York. So moved down to Connecticut. And, you know, not only is high school, you know, completely different, you know, there's a lot about, you know, stereotypes, you know, cliques and all that stuff. I was also a new student there in a completely different state, down the East Coast. So, you know, didn't know what to do and didn't know anybody. But one fateful day, you know, one afternoon, I was just walking, you know, down the classroom and, you know, saw a posting outside that's, you know, was promoting the student-run radio station there. And, you know, went into, like, the after-school meeting that day, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Well, there you go. That's some good stuff. I actually didn't get into sports radio until freshman year here at Mizzou, but I've been doing broadcast-related things since high school. My freshman year, I took an audio-video production class, and the second sort of course in that, the follow-up to that course, we worked for the school news station. And, you know, I would anchor the news desk, and one of those sections, you know, we'd have a little sports section every time after the football team played or the basketball team played or whatever. And so I did that. And so I wound up doing a lot of sports. And in fact, funny enough, you know, going to KOMU and, you know, making packages and things, I look back now, my first package that I did in my entire broadcasting career was I did a little hype piece about my high school softball team, who were pretty good at the time. My first ever sports package that I did for KOMU
was a softball package.
Was about Rockbridge softball.
How about in high school as well? So not even
exactly,
Mizzou.
Exactly. It's the full circle stuff. It was super cool to me. But yeah, so That's where we both kind of got into. That's so cool. I didn't know that story from you. That's awesome. Let us now begin what we all came for. We hinted at this last week, and I'm ready to get into it. Cole, last week we did the positives. We did our favorite memories. We flashed back to freshman year, getting the show off the ground and everything. Today is the fun one. Today is the airing of grievances. We both have a lot of people and a lot of things that we think are wrong with this dang world. And today, we're going to let it out. So, on the last episode of Triple Threat, you are going to experience Cole and Kyle unhinged. Cole, go first. What is your first grievance that you would like to air?
So you're really putting the pressure on me. I thought you were going to do it first because you're the one who originally brought up this whole topic of doing the positives last week and then doing the Aaron grievances this week. But if you want me to start, all right. So every morning, you know, and every like few hours, you know, I go on social media, you know, look at, you know, what the sports are saying, you know, social media, you know, Instagram, Twitter, stuff like that. And every morning I see a post on by CBS Sports. And it's basically saying, oh, the Bears have never had, you know, a history of a good quarterback and neither has Ohio State. So logically, you know, Justin Fields is not going to pan out and, you know, the Bears are going to be in purgatory once again. But need I remind you, the Texans never had a good quarterback before Deshaun Watson. The Browns with Baker Mayfield were in the same story. And it's just, okay, we get it. Bears fans get it. We don't have a good history. But can we stop being reminded every morning?
Clemson didn't have a good quarterback come out of Clemson until Deshaun Watson. Like, name one good quarterback out of Clemson before Deshaun Watson.
I actually did not watch Clemson football until Deshaun Watson.
Exactly,
because
they weren't relevant until Deshaun Watson. That's the deal. I'm so with you on this. Also, just and this plays perfectly into my first grievance.
Okay.
Bears fans, for the love of God
Almighty.
Wait, your
inner grievance is Bears fans?
No.
Okay.
Not necessarily Bears fans, but just like, the media apparatus surrounding the Chicago Bears. Because everything I see regarding the Chicago Bears is so negative. Everything is, oh, we have the worst coach in the league. Oh, we have the worst quarterbacks in the league. Oh, woe is us. The Bears have made the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years. And on top of this, I don't know if Fields is going to pan out, but what I do know is that it looks like Nagy's got a little bit more control in terms of personnel decisions than Pace if the draft was any evidence, which means that the Bears are headed somewhat in the right direction.
I mean, all right, so not to cut you off, but just want to say one quick point. The two biggest things that Bears fans get reminded every single day is Ohio State's never going to quarterback, so Justin Fields will be the same way, and the Bears trade up for Mitch Trubisky instead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly.
It's like, we get it.
The whole media atmosphere is that the Bears are a woe-is-me franchise and that they're nothing good. The Bears are fine. It could be so much worse.
Meaning the Texans.
Exactly. Meaning the Texans. Like, I don't want to hear anybody whining, woe is me, my franchise is garbage, oh, we're in the trash, this is the worst thing that could ever happen, we're the worst. No! You don't have a team that is being run by a youth pastor who has no experience in football, having no actual quarterback because the greatest talent in the history of your team turns out he's a total freaking rapist. You know, so he's gone. And even if he wasn't, he was refusing to play. So he was gone anyway, right? Your defense sucks. And your head coach, his greatest success was finishing in the middle of the standings in the CUSA.
And yeah, I remind you, arguably Bill O'Brien's greatest accomplishment was being up 20 against the Chiefs in the divisional.
And then blowing it. Yes, this is correct.
On his own fault.
On his own fault. Oh my, like that's my deal. That's my first airing of grievances. Is all these other NFL teams be like, we're so bad. And I'm like, no, you're not. It can be so much worse. You have no idea. You know?
I mean, You do bring up a great point about, you know, Houston, and of course, you know, they got Davis Mills as their quarterback now, but, you know, as far as Houston goes...
Mills isn't even going to be the starter.
No,
it's going to be Tyrod Taylor.
It's not, but...
they got Tyrod freaking
Taylor. As far
Taylor.
As Houston goes, they lost A.J. Watt, they lost DeAndre Hopkins, they're going to lose Deshaun Watson, they lost Laremy Tunsil, who ended up being the third overall pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, like...
Brandon Cooks, Will Fuller... It's got David Johnson.
Yeah, man, they got David Johnson, I guess. There you go. You got David freaking Johnson. Oh, man. That's I guess that's kind of my first is the Houston Texans. It's because Jesus, man. Like, it's so bad. It's painful. You know, it's painful to be a Texans fan. Like, I'm so lucky that I'm moving to Milwaukee and I have a valid excuse to like leave the Texans and adopt the Green Bay Packers as my new NFL team.
Even though Aaron Rodgers is leaving?
Even if Aaron Rodgers leaves, at least they have like the rest of their team is somewhat competent, you know?
I mean, Devonta Adams is better than any Texan out there, so.
Like, the Green Bay Packers were one bad Matt LaFleur decision away from a Super Bowl, you know?
So I went first on the first Aaron grievances, talking about, you know, the media outlets, you know, constantly ripping on the Bears and, you know, their history of quarterbacks. This time, you can go first in this set.
All right. For this set, my airing of grievances, and we've spoken about this before, is the lack of coverage of women's athletics at the collegiate and professional level. Because so, and we saw it this past week. We saw it with the NCAA women's golf tournament. They had a completely playable golf course. It was playable. It rained a little bit the day before, but it was a playable course. And the NCAA canceled the regional in Baton Rouge because the course was not, quote, championship quality. It was playable, but apparently it was not championship quality. And this all comes down to the NCAA's mismanaging of women's athletics. Who'd have thunk? The NCAA sucks at managing women's athletics. It's not like we haven't seen this a million times before. Like how the NCAA women's volleyball tournament almost didn't have a TV broadcast for the first two rounds. We saw the weight rooms at the bubble for the women's basketball championships. This is not a new thing, you know? And I look at how they've handled the women's soccer tournament, where like the men's and women's soccer tournaments are going on at the same time, and all the men's games, they get like a standard ESPN broadcast feed. I wanted to watch Milwaukee's second round game in the tournament against Florida State. I had to go to GoHeels.tv on my computer. Couldn't get on my TV. I had to go to it on my computer. Got like a standard definition broadcast and a commentator who, I don't want to toot my own horn because, yeah, we're like college guys and this was like a professional, but I feel like I could have done a better job commentating that game. You know, like that's the level we're at here, where me who like, yeah, I've only got about 4 years of play-by-play under my belt, but I feel like I could have been better than this guy, you know? And that's the state of women's athletics for the NCAA. Like, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. It's inexcusable. And then we look at the professionals, right? And you've got the NWSL, which the NWSL Challenge Cup final outdrew Premier League games, outdrew Arsenal, outdrew most men's soccer games over the weekend that it was played. But where are you going to find the NWSL regular season? Not on your cable channels, man. You got to go to Paramount Plus and pay a premium to watch that regular season game. You know? Like,
there's a lot to unpack on this subject.
There's a lot to unpack, but my grievance is that these women are doing great work on the field, and they deserve to have that work highlighted on reachable television. You know?
I agree with you, but, you know, this isn't the first time the NCAA has made an, you know, unethical decision or has based their entire decision based on financial reasons. I mean, take a look at, you know, the Mizzou postseason ban. If, like, this is my point, though. So, my point is, the NCAA has shown time and time again they are all about financials and money, and they love to put an emphasis in, okay, what can make us the most money as a business? And, you know, we see it time and time again where, you know, kind of like how you alluded to, where it's like the, you know, men's March Madness tournament or like the college football playoff, tons of sponsorships all over, you know, you get coverage and like promotions and, you know, talking points for weeks. But the women's, you don't find out until afterwards, the game's over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And like, these are emerging markets. There's such a growing desire from the regular viewer to watch women's sports. We saw this with the Women's World Cup when the United States won. Viewership for the Women's World Cup through the roof, outdrew the Men's World Cup in America. We saw this even this year. The WNBA pulled big in the wobble. It was, and part of that was because they were like the only thing on. They took advantage of a sportsless market and they showed off, and it was good. You know, same deal with the NWSL. The Challenge Cup was the only soccer being played at one point, so people tuned in. But even then, the NCAA Women's Volleyball Tournament, right? The one where they almost didn't televise the first two rounds. Guess what, Cole? 400% viewer increase for that tournament. There are viewers to be reached. People want to watch this stuff, right? And it just astounds me as someone who's like who's looking at these markets and sees where they're going, that these executives are still like, nah, we're just not going to broadcast the first two rounds. We're not going to give it any eyeballs on social media. We're just gonna let it happen, and then we'll tweet out the winner at the end and be like, hey, congratulations, Kentucky.
I mean, yeah, I agree with your grievances, but, you know, just to add some context in the whole WNBA, you know, viewership in their, you know, term in the championship. Yes, it did gain an insane viewership and percentage. Like, that's amazing. However, when you look at the viewership for the WNBA Finals versus the NBA Finals, even with that high viewership career high the WNBA got, it's still not a third the NBA lowest.
Yeah, it's
NBA
it's
Finals.
Definitely, I mean, it's not so to that
you
level
can see,
yet.
I'm just saying, like, for business perspective, financial reasons, just adding context.
Yeah, it's obviously not to that level yet, but it's only going to get to that level if you give people the avenues with which to watch it. That's my kind of point here. What is your next grievance?
We kind of alluded to this at the end of the show last week, but the Barry Odom Mizzou football years, especially our freshman year.
Oh, God. Those were just so infuriating.
So I have four games that I want to talk about and I want to comment on for arguably some of the worst college football games I've ever been to and or watched. The first one was my freshman year. The game versus Purdue, where they lost 35-3.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was paid up at that game. It was like 90 degrees outside, and just, I think it was David Blau was the quarterback.
We got
just ran all
by
over.
David Blau.
35-3. I remember, I think I left at halftime because I was like,
did.
I give up.
I remember you telling me about this. You left at halftime because we were already getting clapped.
The second game is the SEC Nation game versus South Carolina.
Oh,
because this is the wild part about that game. And, you know, I remember you and I, you know, went down to the SEC, you know, Nation coverage and, you know, saw everything. You know, Michael Porter Jr. and Jonte were there, and it was a great spot. It was all down by the columns. The South Carolina game was insane because the first quarter, Mizzou tackled. Let's see, South Carolina missed a field goal. Mizzou was up like 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. It looked like Mizzou was going to win. But then the second quarter started. Deebo Samuel ran a kickoff for a touchdown, 10-7. Drew Lock, 3-and-out. South Carolina, quick touchdown, 14-10. And that's when Mizzou gave up.
Yeah, it was, oh man, that was such a common theme during the Barry Odom years, right? Like, they get down like 14-10 or they get down like 21-10 or something, and you could literally just see that team shut off.
Anytime they're down, they give up.
Anytime.
It's that simple.
Anytime they were down, you could see them shut off. I mean, we saw that in the Texas Bowl that same year where, like, you know, in the first quarter, they looked okay, and then Texas just, like, ran the blazes off of them. And they just shut down. And, like, you know, Texas's punter pinned Mizzou inside their own 10, like, with every punt. And they, like, never made it across the 20. You know? Like, it was, like, you just see them just shut down. It was the worst. You know? I'm so with you on
this. So I have two other games I want to talk about, and these are more recent. The 15-14 game against Kentucky. And I was in studio for that football game. I just remember getting a text from my parents. I think it was like a minute to go in the game. Mizzou was up with like a minute to go. I remember getting a text from my parents like with like an eyeball emoji like, oh, Mizzou might upset Kentucky. I'm like, no, shush. Stop.
Don't get the hopes up.
Right.
They always
and
blow
then,
it.
You know, we saw what happened, you know. There's been screenshots all over social media where Mizzou failed to cover anybody. Kentucky literally ran down the entire football field in under a minute, and Mizzou just did not care. And then, of course, the PI call, then Kentucky got another chance, and Mizzou ultimately lost 15-14 against Kentucky.
Yep, I cited that image when I got into a Twitter argument with an Arkansas fan after Barry Odom got hired as Arkansas's defensive coordinator.
I agree.
And I was like, oh, hey, Arkansas, enjoy your new defense. I posted that photo, and the Arkansas fans are like, it could be worse. I'm like, sir, you don't even know the context of how, you know.
I mean, we literally saw the Barry Odom defense when Mizzou played Arkansas.
We saw the Barry Odom defense when they played Missouri State freshman year.
They didn't tackle.
They gave up, what was it, like 30 points to Missouri State?
I
want to
say the final score was like 75-40 or something.
Yeah, it was like insane. It was so stupid. Well,
that was the first Mizzou game we ever went to.
Well, they fired the defensive coordinator after that game, but like.
Let's see. Mizzou, Middle State. Let's see.
I can.
It was like, I know it was 70 points at least, because I remember getting a test from my dad saying, that's a football score. Yep, 72-43.
72-43. You're out here playing basketball.
And I want to say, like, Drew Locke got, like, SEC or, like, national player honors because he threw for like 8 touchdowns or something.
He was 21 of 34 for 521 yards and 7 touchdowns. Oh, my God. What the hell is this game?
And then one final, you know, Mizzou, Barry Odom game that I want to bring up that, honestly, this was, out of the bunch, probably the most depressing. When Mizzou was ranked 23 and then lost at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for me, you know? Like, that game, going into that game, and I was like, oh, man, Mizzou actually might have a half-decent chance to make a shout in the SEC East. Like, let's see how they do, you know? That was the year of the bowl ban, so they were playing with house money. So they could have played spoiler for a team that, you know, like a Georgia or something, where like a team that probably could have had a shout at the SEC championship, and then Mizzou plays spoiler and keeps them out, you know. But then that game, they just said no. You know, like
we shut ourselves out.
They that's the best way to put it. They shut themselves out. I was like, what on earth? You know?
I mean, there are more Mizzou fans at that Vanderbilt game than Vanderbilt fans, and you still find a way to lose being nasty ranked 23 in the nation. That was the game that saved Derek Mason's job briefly.
Yeah, like that game kept Derek Mason around for another season. Obviously, I mean, he got fired at the end of this past one. But that game kept Derek Mason for an extra year. You know?
I remember I could not watch the game after the third quarter. I think I just played with The Last of Us or something just to clear my head and actually enjoy something with my time.
I want to say that game was going on around the same time as either the World Series or the ALCS. Because I remember the Astros playing. And I remember after, like, the second quarter of that game, I just switched to the Astros.
Fair enough.
I was like, I really don't care about it anymore. There's a better game with a better team on. I'm just gonna, like, I've been flipping back and forth. But this time I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to flip anymore. I'm just going to stay on the Astros game. And I think they won that game, so it was a good decision.
So those are the four most miserable Barry Windham games for me. I don't know if there's any more you want to add or touch more on this subject.
No, I honestly share those ones. I think that those are, when we look back at the Barry Odom years, those are the ones we're going to remember, where it was like, wow, there was something here, and now there's not, you know? And like I think, you know, going back to last week, talking about good memories, you know, it's always mean to say, you know, oh man, I'm glad someone lost their job. But man, going from Barry Odom to Eli Drinkwitz, biggest upgrade that this school has made in years.
Barry Odom would not have won the LSU game. I promise
no,
you.
He would have laid down and died after the second quarter.
Because I want to say LSU, like, got
they
two
were,
turnovers in a row and, like, up by 14 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, they were up by two scores in, like, the third or fourth quarter.
Right.
You know? Yeah, no, Barry Odom would have never won that. All righty. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, more of our fun grievances and final send-offs. It's Triple Threat, brought to you by Stickler and Dryer Law Firm, here on KCOU.
Hi, I'm Alec Baldwin for Save the Manatee Club. Manatees are wonderful. Their gentle, playful ways are fascinating to watch. Yet these harmless marine mammals face growing threats to their survival. Many manatees are injured or killed from boat strikes or other human activities, and their habitat is being lost. Manatees need your help. Please call Save the Manatee Club at 1-800-432-JOIN or visit www.savethemanatee.org.
Hey Mizzou fans, did you know that research at the Wellness Resource Center indicates that 80% of MU students have a negative opinion of people who litter during tailgating? This is why Mizzou has the best fans in America. This public service announcement has been brought to you by the Wellness Resource Center, Craft Beer Cellar, and KCOU 88.1 FM.
Kick it!
And welcome back to the final episode of Triple Threat, brought to you by Stickler and Dryer Law Firm here on KCOU. Kyle Jones here with Cole Tusing, airing our grievances to end things. And Cole, you just finished talking about Barry Odom. I want to talk about another team at this fine campus. Mizzou baseball!
Not what I was expecting you to go, but all right.
For the love of God, man. Like, we could talk about Konzo and we could do that.
That's
for
what I thought you were going
but
with this.
Nah, like, I've said my piece on Konzo enough. This team is so disastrously bad in such a consistent way that it is infuriating, you know? They are currently on a 10-game losing streak, longest in school history. This is a year after their shortened season saw them beat such illustrious opponents as Texas and OU in Houston at the College Classic. Last season, Mizzou looked like a good baseball team. They looked, before the stoppage due to COVID, they looked like they were going to contend in the SEC. You know? Suddenly, a year after that, with no real big changes to the roster, they are one of the worst teams in baseball. You know? They can't win. They'll get a lead like they did last night where they were up 3-2 against the number 3 Mississippi State. They'll take that 3-2 lead, make it a 4-2 lead, and carry that all the way to the 7th inning. And then suddenly, a switch flicks in their brain. And despite the fact that there is no draft in the NCAA, they decide, oh yes, I forgot, we're tanking. And they will lose 5-2 to Mississippi, or 5-4 rather, to Mississippi State. And this is not an unusual occurrence. We have seen this time and time again with the Mizzou baseball team. when they, against good opponents, like opponents who they should not be competing with, they get up and have a good lead and they blow it like a balloon at a clown party. You know? They just blow it right up. And this is not new. We saw this not last year. Last year they were actually good. But the year before, where they were two weekends away from a good spot at the SEC tournament and potentially making it into an NCAA regional for the tournament. Had they, after winning, after what was considered probably, I'd say, an upset win in the series in Knoxville against Tennessee, one that we went to, all they had to do was win their final two series and then have a decent showing at the SEC tournament. They got swept in their final two series, and they got beaten the first round of the SEC tournament, and suddenly, they didn't make it into the NCAA tournament. Funny how that works, you know?
Funny how that works where you end on a, what, seven-game losing streak?
Yep, seven-game losing streak.
Shocker, you don't go in the NCAA tournament.
Like, they were, and they didn't even have to, they didn't even have to, like, win all of those last seven games. They just needed to, like, win, like, three or four of their last seven, and then, like, make it to, like, the second or third round of the SEC tournament. And they did none of that. Despite, in the weekends before that, beating Tennessee in such a way that they looked like a very, very good baseball team. We were there, Cole. You remember those last two games of the Tennessee series. They looked good.
I do very much remember those final two games. And, you know, it's kind of ironic that we're talking about this because we kind of alluded this to it a little bit last week that the first game, they looked horrible. Their pitches were horrible. Their bats weren't swinging. And then the next two games, something magically clicked.
Yeah, something magically clicked, and they kicked butt. And, like, there was a similar thing that happened this season with Texas A&M. But the thing is, Texas A&M sucks. Their baseball team is horrible. They might be worse than Mizzou. So, in game one against Texas A&M, Mizzou gets clapped like 16-3. You know? It was one of the worst baseball games I've ever seen. I was there. I was on the call. It was the devil of a baseball game. I've seen bad baseball games. That was horrendous. And then the second game, they like mashed. You know? It was like a complete night and day performance. And then the third game was similar. A switch flicked in game two and three for Mizzou, and they decided, oh, yeah, we're going to play good baseball. And then after that, they haven't won a game since. You know?
Very interesting grievance with, you know, you taking the diamond, because I honestly thought, you know, the way we're alluding to, we kind of talked about Barry Odom. I personally thought that you're going to take it to the hardwood with Konzo Martin, but... You know, if you want to hear any of our grievances about Konzo Martin and this Mizzou team, especially them falling off a cliff, just listen to any of our previous shows this semester, and you'll get a pretty good sense of what we're talking about.
I was going to say, it's now your turn for our grievance. Would you like to use your grievance on Konzo Martin one more time?
I mean, similarly, we talked everything that we've said this entire semester, this team falling off a cliff, and what they still haven't done yet. Like, I've been to a lot of Mizzou basketball games, especially since freshman year. They still cannot break a press.
Yeah, no. I don't think Konzo Martin knows how. Cause it has been 4 years. And we've seen, you know, 4 years worth of different players come and go. And not a single one of them can break a press.
It doesn't make sense how you can have an all SEC guard and Drew Smith and they can't break a press. But that's not my arrogance, is because, you know, once again, everything that we've said about Konzo Martin, you know, teams, you can just go back and listen to one of the earlier episodes and, you know, hear the grievance, because everything that I would say, we've said before. So my errant grievance is going to be the NCAA, similar to you, but it's going to be the college football playoff system.
Oh.
Expanded to 8 to 12 teams.
Amen.
Stop this four-team stuff, because it gets boring, because I guarantee you, College football season is going to start in like August. I guarantee you I know who the teams are going to be already.
Who you got?
It's going to be like Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and like Ohio State.
Yep, that's about right.
It never changes.
That's what it is every year. Until there's some sort of massive power structure thing, which won't happen until Nick Saban retires. And even then, I don't think Alabama's going to fall off because they'll just hire the next best guy.
They went from Bear Bryant to Nick Saban. They won't fall off.
Exactly. Like, Alabama's never not going to be good.
They'll go from Nick Saban to Bill Belichick.
Don't give them ideas, dang it.
Alabama's been dominant for, what, 80, 90 years?
Basically the entire existence of their program. Like the only time that Alabama wasn't, like, a good football program.
It was, like, early 2000s, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, even then they were okay. The only thing that happened there was that they were getting pipped to the spot by USC and Texas. But they were still pretty good, you know?
I just remember there was a point in, like, early 2000s where Alabama was, like, a 7-win team, but now...
Well, like they were getting outclassed in the SEC by Florida. And that was when Urban Meyer was at Florida, and they had, like, Tim Tebow and stuff. So, like, it was okay. You know, like, you had Urban Meyer. Hard to... And Nick Saban was still at...
Miami?
Either Miami or LSU?
One of the two.
Yeah, one of the two. He wasn't at Bama yet. But once Saban got to Bama, it was off and running. But that was like the only time besides like the early 1900s where it was John Heisman at frickin' Auburn or Georgia Tech back when Tech was in the SEC. You know?
Like, for the most part, Alabama's never been bad.
Like, there's a reason Bama was in Forrest Gump. There's a reason Forrest Gump didn't go to Auburn. You know?
There's a reason why people are constantly bringing up the point that it's banned the college football playoff because it gets born from any sport, but especially college football, which, in my opinion, is my favorite sport out of anything. It gets boring seeing Alabama in every year, Clemson every year, Georgia in every year, Ohio State every year. Give me Cincinnati. Give me UCF. Give me Iowa State.
Give me U of H, man.
Give me any of those.
The Cougars are only a few years removed from being like a one-loss team and then one loss being Navy.
My point exactly.
You know?
I would much rather see a U of H or any of those teams in there instead of Alabama.
Give me literally anyone else. Like, and I understand the argument is like, oh, man, Alabama's the best team. Like, yeah, okay. Then they can stay in. They can be one of the eight. But, like, for the love of God, it's so boring seeing the same four every year. Like, I was so happy when LSU made it in. I hate LSU. You know? Like, I have a distinct disdain for the LSU Tigers. Mostly because I know certain people from LSU. But
fair enough.
But, like, when I saw them in instead of, like, Bama for the 79th time, I was so happy, you know?
I mean, to the point about, you know, oh, it's going to be like another Alabama championship. It's like, oh, you know, yeah, you can put Alabama in. You know, Alabama may win like more championships down the road. But at least it spanned the field to give teams like that are A, not in the Power Five or even a group of five, give them at least a chance.
Yeah. Like, that's my gripe, is that UCF or Cincinnati or SMU or whoever the heck doesn't even get a chance, you know? They can go we've seen this. They can go undefeated, almost undefeated 2 years in a row, and they're not even afforded the chance, the opportunity to fight for a national championship. And that's not fair, you know? And people are like, oh, they should move to another conference. It's not that easy.
And even if they do move to another conference, it's still going to be Bama taking over them.
Exactly. Like, UCF would move to either the ACC or the SEC. Do you know what would happen there? They would probably be like a one-loss conference championship team. And do you know who that one loss would probably be? Bama or Clemson. You know? And that's because, like, those regular season games, stuff happens. Right? You usually get your expected result in a regular season game. But so many times in the postseason, we see teams crack under the pressure. We see the big upset. Look at Boise State against was it OU in the Fiesta Bowl that one year, right? The lateral that won Boise State the Fiesta Bowl. Like, crazy stuff happens when you put teams under the spotlight on national TV.
The kick six.
The kick six, exactly. Like, Ohio State crumbling in the CFP. You know, like, these are good teams, but when you put them under pressure like that, something changes. But for a UCF or a Cincinnati or, you know, an App State, they never get that chance, you know? It's crazy to me.
At the very minimum, they should expand to eight teams. And similar to, like, what kind of, like, your formula, your system, where it's, like, conference champions, automatic bid, similar to that I do in March Madness, and then that's, like, two slots for, like, the two other best teams in the top 25.
What they need to do is they need to do a 12-team field, right? Power 5 and Group of 5 teams all get auto bids.
Conference champions.
Yeah, conference champions get auto bids. And then you have two at-larges, and the at-larges get in, you know? And the best two champions get buys, you know? That way you're rewarded for playing well in the regular season and getting yourself into a conference championship. But you're not punished for being in the, you know, the Sun Belt.
That's how the NFL does it.
Exactly, exactly. Like, look at the NFC East. Every team in that division sucks.
Every team was below 500.
But at least one of them was guaranteed to make it in. You know? Just because they suck doesn't mean they don't get a chance to fight. They won their division for a reason. You know? I'm so with you on this one, Cole. It's such a great grievance to air. Because I don't think it'll change.
It won't.
But it needs to. Or else we're going to have a stale product every year. Same four teams fighting it out and Bama wins in the end. I mean, it's already a meme. It's already stale. You know?
Totally agree. And, you know, there's really not much I can say on this, you know, grievance about the college football playoff expanding past four teams. Because, once again, it comes down to the same thing every year and just the monotony of it.
Yes. All right. Final segment, what is your grievance you would like to air?
My final grievance. The person came in the show with three, so I'll have to come up with the top of my head. do you have one? So, while I think?
I do, but I really would like to close out with it. So, okay. let me help let me help you find out. The Bulls. Anything you want to rant about the Bulls?
I mean, not really. I mean, they're still in the rebuilding mode.
Oh, how about you're a Pac-12 writer? How about the new commissioner of the Pac-12? What are we thinking
about what he said about the comments with the men's, women's NCAA stuff?
Well, not just that, but just general Pac-12 attitude.
So, I mean, what he said about, you know, he wants to, you know, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like,
let me find the release because I think I know what you're talking about. I just saw this. Yeah, here we are.
It was like increased exposure for the women's, but have like all the media attention for the men. I can't remember exactly what the wording
was. Let's see. Elevating women's basketball is about giving it more media exposure. Women's basketball is one of these things where when people get to see it and watch it, particularly in person, but also on TV, they fall in love with it. I think it is about elevating the exposure for that sport and many of the other sports. But again, I want to be clear. We know where the bread is buttered. We're focused on the revenue sports and winning in men's basketball and football. That was his quote. So it sounds like while he thinks that putting more eyes on women's basketball would be good, that's not his priority. Despite the fact that the Pac-12 hasn't had a successful football program since Marcus Mariota, and they haven't had a successful men's basketball program since, well, UCLA was good this year, but that came out of nowhere.
In a way, yes, they were the Cinderella. They were one lucky shot away from the national championship.
Meanwhile, the women's basketball world is ruled by Oregon, by UCLA, by Stanford, and now USC is putting more emphasis on their women's basketball program. They just hired a new coach for the express purpose of topping the Pac-12 in women's basketball. They want to be at the top of that sport. The Pac-12 is winning championships in women's basketball. You know where else they're winning championships, Cole? Softball. Pac-12 softball is lit. UCLA and Oregon, lit at softball. So, like, I understand, and this goes back to my last grievance, you know, a few segments ago about giving women's sports more exposure. But, like, dude, when your team's in football, like, sucks so hard it's a meme, and basketball only gets popular because of a Cinderella team in UCLA, maybe focus on where you're successful, you know?
All right, so I just thought of a grievance, and, you know, I could talk about, you know, the Pac-12 commissioner stuff, but, you know, kind of like how you mentioned, you kind of already, you know, touched on this on your previous segment about the NCAA putting more emphasis in, you know, women's sports and, you know, marketing it better. So I guess, you know, my final grievance of the show ever is kind of alluded to this already about fans on social media with bandwagon. So, like, you know, the Warriors and, like, 2016 fans on social media, Alabama fans all the time, Clemson fans all the time, Chiefs fans all the time on social media.
Yep, yep.
Trying to think of other bandwagons out there.
You said Warriors?
I said Warriors in, like, 2016.
Okay. I think you kind of hit all of them. You hit all the big
ones. The major ones, yes. Yeah. So, based on my grievances, like, they'll come out of nowhere once the team is good, and they will be as wild as possible, and they will be the most, how do I say this, out there on social media. And, you know, that's like they've been passionate all this time, when in reality, they became a fan when the team was contending.
Yeah, no, I'm, and I'll say this as someone who experienced this sort of thing firsthand, and then experienced the opposite. So, I experienced firsthand a bunch of Astros fans coming out of the woodwork in 2017. Like, it was very much like, you know, hey, where did you come from? I didn't see you rooting for the team or saying anything about the team when we were losing 118 games a year. You know, like, it was one, you know, a lot of Astros fans had to, like, you know, if you didn't love me at my blank, don't love me at my blank memes, right? If you didn't love me at the 2012 disaster, don't love me at my 2017 World Series. Yeah. And it's like, where did you all come from?
Some of the Cubs, if you didn't love us in the mid, you know, 2010s, don't love us in 2016.
So yeah, it's very much like, where in the world were you when we were Garbo? I mean, so many of us have stuck by this team through thick and thin. So I experienced that. But then after the news of the scandal came out, random people who, like, have never talked about baseball whatsoever would just stick their hand in the pot to, like, rag on the Astros. It's like, sir, you don't even pay attention to the sport. You have no idea what is going on. You know? So I totally understand this grievance. It's like, I hate bandwagons so much.
Especially on social media.
And they're rabid on Twitter.
They are.
Yes, there's such a rabid bandwagon thing. It's always like, you know, it's always something going on. Always something. You know, there's always some sort of rah about something. It's like, can we not?
Speaking of this point, there was a report, speaking of bandwagons, and, you know, I don't know if you saw us, you know, being in, you know, connections to Milwaukee and everything, the number one overall recruit in the nation, instead of committing to Duke, committed to Milwaukee.
About this.
And all the Duke fans on social media were emotional.
Which they shouldn't be. Do you know why he committed to UWM over Duke?
Because his dad's the coach.
His dad's the coach. Like, how can you fault a
but
kid
no,
for
no,
playing
Duke
with
gave
his
him more money.
Yeah, imagine, man. Dude, if you got the bag from Duke and still
I mean,
the
that's
EWF.
How Duke recruits admit it.
I mean, yeah.
We probably Same with Bama.
We probably can't say it on air without getting into trouble, but you're not wrong. But no, I was so happy when that came out. You know, it was like, I didn't expect it. I'll be honest. Yeah, it was the
number four recruit in the nation.
Yeah, it was number four recruit in the nation. Patrick Baldwin, or Patrick Baldwin Jr., I guess. His dad, Patrick Baldwin, is the head coach at UWM. And that just came out of nowhere. Because, like, there was no buzz around it, at least that I saw. But it was like, boom. And you know the best part? UWM's Twitter, the second that he announced his commitment, shot out a, here's a link to my season tickets tweet.
Nice. Like,
get the bag, Panthers. Let's go.
I mean, Lily saw that first game with season tickets with Mizzou and Michael
yeah,
Porter.
Yeah. It gave me such MPJ vibes, down to the fact that I'm going to call him PBJ, you know?
All right.
Patrick Baldwin Jr., PBJ.
Yeah.
So, like, it gave me such similar vibes to when Michael Porter Jr. committed to Mizzou. And hopefully, as someone who, like, I'm a UWM fan now, you know, my fiance goes there. I do sincerely hope that, what do you call it? This brings more big recruits to UWM. Because they've been pretty bad the last few years. They actually almost made the NCAA tournament through the Horizon League Championship. Like, they almost won their conference tournament. They were like a game, they were like two games away. So hopefully this kind of spurs things on for them. I really hope so.
So that was my Aaron agreements of bandwagon fans, especially on social media. What was the one you want to close out the show with ever?
Mine is also on social media.
Okay.
And I have names, Cole.
Names?
I have names.
Would I know these people?
You know these people well, Cole.
Oh, okay.
You've heard of them. You've seen their blasphemy. You know how bad they are.
I'm listening.
We'll start with one and then add another.
Okay.
Dave Portnoy, you are a misogynistic turd who has no business being on any social platform whatsoever. Your voice is detrimental to everything good that is America, and you need to quit talking or else you're going to ruin sports for the rest of us. That's the first one. And now with my final little piece on KCOU. A note to Clay Travis. Clay.
Okay.
Clay, you will never listen to this, ever. But if it does make it to your ears, and I hope it does, I have some questions. Question one. Why are you so mad? Every time I see a Clay Travis tweet, you just seem mad, brother. Like, maybe go outside and touch grass. Because it's clear that you're spending way too much time of your life in front of your computer, looking for things to get mad about. And it's not healthy. I'm concerned for your health, mentally and physically. Because every time I see something from you, it's just, why is woman doing this in sports? Why is trans person doing this in sports? Why is gay person doing this in sports? And sir, I can answer the question as to why they're doing things in sports. Because they can. Because women should be in sports. They are allowed. Trans people should be in sports. And they should be in the sport that they identify with as the gender that they identify as. If a trans woman wants to play women's sports, she should. Because she's a freaking woman. You know? But every time I see a tweet from Clay Travis, it's just so much anger, so much hatred, it's so much bigotry, it's so just mean. I'm just perplexed. Sir, this is a Wendy's. There's no need to be mad. There's no need to get riled up. You know, you talk about freedom. America, freest country in the world, best country in the world. You know why we're free? Because freedom means that people can do what makes them happy. Do what they want. Free. You know, for example, if a trans woman wants to play women's sports, she should be free to do that because we are America, the land of the free. But every time I see you tweet, it's such anger, such vitriol to these very basic issues. So, sir, with my final 2 minutes of airtime, here on Triple Threat, brought to you by Stickler and Dryer Law Firm, here on KCOU 88.1 FM Columbia, I ask, I beg, calm down. Take some chill pills. Educate yourself. Go touch some grass. And get off the freaking internet!
That's great. I was, you know, smiling through that entire, you know, tangent a little bit, but, you know, kind of alluding to your point, whenever I see people, especially on Twitter, tweet out, like, stuff that and they always seem, like, angry or, you know, they're always, you know, like, mocking something or they're always being pessimistic or
I was just negative.
Condescending in
just,
some way.
Yeah, or like
yeah
trans,
I just block them.
Transphobic or I
just block them.
Because
I don't want to see, like, any negativity or any, like, condescending stuff on anything,
yeah.
Whether that's women's sports or just in general.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Positivity is key. You know, being kind to others is key. Educating yourself is key. I think people need to educate themselves, especially on, like, you know, trans issues and issues of, like, human rights and things. But also, like, so much in terms of mental health. And this is something, you know, I have to get this out. We got, like, 1 minute. There is so much value to just, like, when you're feeling mad, when you're feeling angry, just go outside and touch grass. It's so, like, freeing. And we haven't done a lot of grass touching this year because of the pandemic. A lot of people I know haven't been outside a lot. But if you can just take some time, get off your Twitter or your Facebook and just go touch grass. I do it, and it makes me feel so much better, both physically and mentally.
Well, now people can't because the CDC lifted
exactly.
The mask mandate.
Now, if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to social distance. You can take that mask off, and you can go touch some grass. So that's what we're going to do with our final days here at Mizzou. We are going to go outside, Cole. We're going to touch some grass. We're going to say goodbye to KCOU. So for one last time, thank you for tuning in for 4 years to KNC Sports, to Triple Threat. Have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful rest of your life. For Cole Tusi, I'm Kyle Jones, saying goodbye.